Starship Enterprise. Job. That's a very nice ringtone. I'd like to get me one of them. It's very pleasant. Look at Job, if you would. I just like to tease. That's what my problem is. I'm sorry. Have you ever heard that old phrase? When people have said this to me when I'm really down in the muddy grubs, down in the valley, discouraged, disappointed. It's almost like you got to pull your socks down just to see. You ever been that low? And what do people inevitably say? And this is such a true statement. Well, there's always somebody worth on. So you thank God for that. I guarantee you, there's somebody that's worse off than you. And you can begin, and you try to encourage people, hey, look at these positives in your life. When I preached at Bryan Station, I went to visit Brother Wormley's widow. And I know her pretty well. Her name is Lorraine. And I knew that right now she's been moved from a house to a nursing home. And she's not taking it very well. So when I went in to see her, you know, I could tell that she was just going to really just dig in. So I went in and I said, wow, Lorraine, can you believe this room? I said, this is one of the nicest places I ever been in. And I was telling the truth. This place was decked out. It didn't smell. Everything was clean. Her room was huge, and so I just started focusing on every positive thing. And I said, do you get to eat three times a day? She said, yes, they serve me my meals. Wow, that's great, you don't even have to cook. You know, and the point I was trying to help her to see that it's not nearly as bad as she thought it was. And I know it's very difficult, but many times it's hard for us to get people to focus on the positives and not so much on the negatives, because that's human nature. Well, as I was preparing this message and thinking about Job and the calamities of Job that he encountered, I thought, here's a guy that won't work with. I mean, other than the Lord Jesus Christ, who in the Bible had it worse than Job? Nobody that I can actually think of that's featured. You know, I couldn't very well go up to Job and say, you know what, just you're better off than most people. I couldn't have said that to him when he was on the ash heap scraping his sores with the potsherd. But I want us to read tonight this series of events. And I don't want to stop. I want to read all the way through so that we get the force of the calamities of Job. And we'll start in verse 9. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord.
Now, before I go on here, this may be the worst thing that could happen to you or me, is to have the accuser of the brethren make it his personal mission, with God's permission, to ruin your life. And that's really what Satan intended to do. Satan is an evil, malignant, wicked, filthy, rotten angel. Fallen angel. Very powerful. And he set his sights on this man that feared God. Verse 13, "And there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their eldest brother's house," drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, "and there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Verse 4, chapter 2. "And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips." When you read that all at once, it really makes you wonder, how in the world could he withstand this onslaught and keep a measure of composure where he was able to actually worship God and give glory to the sovereign God of heaven? These calamities which fell upon Job were devastating and swift. messenger after messenger came bearing more bad news about the loss of property, wealth, and finally, his family, his children. You know, it's difficult for me, just looking at the range of experience that I have in 57 years of living. I've never had anything like this happen to me. So it's difficult to imagine so many what we would call bad things happening to one individual in such a brief amount of time. It's even more amazing in the light of Job's reaction to the submission to the sovereign will of God. Most men would curse God, or at least complain and murmur. Job instead worshiped the Almighty and thanked Him for past blessings. The one who initiated the devastation of Job's house is a very formidable foe of righteousness. Satan, the accuser of the brethren, the oppressor of the saints of God, sought to destroy Job's faith in God. And with God's permission, Satan began to wreak havoc upon the physical and emotional makeup of Job. Satan's desire was to see Job fall from his uprightness. Satan wanted to hear Job curse God to his face. And it tells you something about how malignant Satan is. He delights in seeing people fail. Satan loves ruination, corruption, chaos, anarchy. And I think he takes special delight when God's people are afflicted and they begin to go astray. Satan is the prince and the power of the air, the god of this world, whose ungodly influence permeates every corner of the world. Peter warns us about the cunning and vicious wiles of the devil. 1 Peter 5, verses 8 and 9. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Satan is alive. He's real. He has emissaries. He has people that act on his behalf. He has spirits in high places, in government, in politics, in religion. Now, if Satan were presently chained, you know, the amillennialist says that when Christ came the first time, that His work on the cross bound Satan, and now he's unable to act. That's a pipe dream. It's a lie. There'd be no need for 1 Peter 5, 8, 9 if Satan was inactive. And they'll say, oh, well, I didn't mean he was inactive. Well, listen, when you are bound, I mean, bind somebody in a chair. Wrap them with ropes. Put them in a chair, wrap them up, see how much damage, and put a piece of duct tape over their mouth. See how much they can get done. If nobody tends to them, they'll die there. Satan's not dead. He's not bound. He is defeated. I believe that the principalities and powers were spoiled when Jesus Christ died and rose again. The victory was secured. Now I believe that the ultimate victory is going to come, the final put down, if you will, of Satan and the false prophet and the Antichrist when they're going to be cast into the lake of fire, where there'll be the flame, the smoke of their torment will ascend up forever and ever and ever, and they'll experience infinite bondage in the lake of fire. But He's real. 2 Corinthians 2:11 says, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." Folks, you may never face the physical and emotional calamities of Job, but if you're a child of God, you had best not be ignorant of Satan's devices, his temptations, his presence, his activity in this world. I believe that that was Job's greatest adversary. Not the things that happened to him, but Satan himself. He's a real enemy of the saints of God. Ephesians 6, verses 11 and 12, "Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I believe Satan is using wicked music, Hollywood, drugs, alcohol, a whole host of things. Feminism, the homosexual movement. I believe all of that has been inspired, activated by Satan. And the sad thing is, he's done quite a bit of damage, a lot of work. You know, it really irritates me. Satan is constantly sowing seeds of discord everywhere. Either Satan, his emissaries, his ambassadors, and his preachers. They're sowing the seed of discord everywhere. We as Baptists ought to be sowing the good seed of the Word of God and doing mission work and witnessing to people to counteract the work of Satan. Now, it's impossible for Satan to recapture the soul of the saint, but it's quite possible for him to destroy the testimony of the child of God. And he was ruthless in his repeated attacks on Job. When he saw that Job would not curse God because of his loss of wealth, servants, and children, he smote Job himself with a very grievous physical disease. Yet in spite of Satan's attacks, Job overcame him through the sustaining grace of God. So, the number one calamity that Job faced was his adversary, Satan. But then start to think about this. That is that's spiritual wickedness coming against an individual, throwing everything he has at him to destroy his life, his testimony, his family. And all that, Job did not curse God. It's so miraculous. It's so amazing to me the way that Job reacted. Job systematically lost everything he owned and everything he exercised authority over. The first blow fell upon his oxen and his asses, the means of labor, which were his chief source of wealth. The second stroke follows immediately, falling upon the sheep, the source of his food and clothing for him and his family. The third stroke falls upon the camels, the animals used for burden bearing and for travel, the source of his commercial wealth. Then the whirlwind falls upon the house where his sons and daughters were feasting, leaving but one servant to tell of their death. So the blows fall in quick succession. without any opportunity for partial recovery. I mean, isn't it devastating when you see when the news forecast comes on and they show you a flood and the after effects? Or a tornado? And where people are kind of just walking around and everything's gone. You feel so devastated for them. Job lost. At least in those cases, there's some partial recovery that begins to happen. Right? With Job, there was no recovery. One thing after another came upon him. Those blows fell in quick succession. They came with terrible suddenness in the midst of prosperity, happiness, and piety. They were incurable, cumulative, stunning. In one brief hour, Job is stripped of everything. Satan had done his work thoroughly under the permission of an all-wise God. And some may question, why would the Lord allow that? Is it fair to ask that question? Sure it is. We're human beings. Certainly. I bet you Job started thinking as he's on that ash heap, and his friends are basically railing on him, accusing him, calling him a hypocrite. But Job starts thinking, man, why? Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief. You know, though thou slay me, yet will I trust you. But wow. Have you ever felt that way? Over just little things that happen to us in comparison. It would do us well the next time we face a trial to at least have this mental Rolodex in our minds that kind of goes over what happened to Job so that we can say, Lord, thank you for not giving Satan permission to do to me what he did to Job. The last thing I want to cover, if all these things weren't enough, there were two things to me that would have broke a camel's back after everything was gone. Satan said, yeah, everything's gone, but he still has his health intact. And God permitted him to smite the body of Job immediately with a loathsome disease of boils. I don't know if you've ever had a real boil where you get an infection underneath the skin that rises up and that is extremely painful, barely to the touch. Have you ever had a boil like that? I have. And I don't have any disease that I know of, but I've had. Could you imagine having that over your entire body? My youngest son, Aaron, he got chicken pox when he was about, I don't know, 4 or something like that, maybe 5 or 6. And I'm telling you, there was not a spot on his body that didn't have a chicken pox. He had them on his eyelids. He had them in his nostrils. I mean, this kid had chicken pox everywhere. And he was just limp. He didn't have nothing. He felt so bad. But even that doesn't compare to Job. And right at the time when you would need your wife the most, in a time of crisis, who are you going to count on, you know, to be there for you? Your wife, your husband, the one that you've pledged. I don't know if they said the vows for better or worse back then in sickness and in health. Maybe they were born out of this. I don't know. But all I know is this. At that crucial moment, all his wife had to say is, basically, are you an idiot? Curse God and die. What's wrong with you? And that would be awful. To feel as bad as you do emotionally and physically, you're broken, you're hurting, you're bleeding. And your wife basically turns her back on the entire ordeal. And Job had enough to say, you're speaking foolishly. And once again, he demonstrated his faith in God. Tonight, I've dealt with a lot of stuff that's really very negative. I mean, I remember the first time I ever read this, after I had been saved, and I'm reading my Bible through, and I read the first two chapters of Job, and I'm thinking, how does anybody survive this? How can there be 40 more chapters? You know? Because I looked there, I think there's 42 chapters in Job. I read the first two and I thought, how can there be 40 more? And we're not going to do a detailed exposition of all those. I really want to bring this next week. I want to deal with the confession that Job made, and kind of break it down a little bit and see how he responded to all these calamities. So far what we've discovered is that Job had a deep knowledge of God. Much of what he believed translates into New Testament doctrine. Remember that message? We also learned a lot about the character of Job from God's perspective. And remember, that's really what counts. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. God's estimate of Job was really amazing. And tonight we've considered all of these calamities that befell him. Next week we're going to look at his confession. And then we're going to tie it up with a message dealing with how to apply this, these gleanings from the life of Job. So we're done for tonight.